This is the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. Thank you for listening, subscribing, and hitting subscribe on your friend's phone without them knowing. Coming to you from the Kitchen Studios in downtown Raleigh. This episode is sponsored in part by Joe Van Gogh Coffee, serving the community from seed to cup, taking particular care at every step to honor the bean. And now, they put the rest in the restaurant industry. It's Max Trujillo and Matthew Weiss.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. I am your only host today, Max Trujillo. And we are, I say we because Matt and I were both in Nashville this whole weekend. Someone had to go back home to teach a wine class because that's what he does, and that's fine. He hit the nonstop early this morning. He did not wake me up in the hotel room, which was very kind of him. But I am here still in Nashville because I love this town and I love what's going on in the food culture. And I was recommended by not only a great food writer and icon in the area, Nikki Miller-Ka, as well as Andrea Weigel, former previous guest of the show, to talk with one Mackenzie Lunsford. And then once it was announced on Facebook, oh, you should talk to Mackenzie Lunsford, then a bunch of people said, oh, you make sure you talk to her. Oh, she's the authority. Oh, everyone needs to talk to Mackenzie Lunsford. So without further ado, we are here talking with Mackenzie Lunsford.
Who is blushing right now, for
yes,
sure.
You're so popular. Everyone loves you. As I look at your title, you are the food and culture storyteller for USA Today Network South. And an editor for Southern Kitchen, is that correct?
That's right, and you cannot fit that on a business card.
Right, yeah.
It's a mouthful.
But you, so in short, you are a writer, you are a food writer, you look over typically the Southern region of food and primarily write for USA Today, is that kind of
the idea? Yeah, everything you just said, it's all USA Today.
Got it.
So that just means that they have me doing a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, and speaking of that, I did a little deep dive on some of the content you've had. You've put out a lot of content and fun, just like useful stuff. Like most recently, don't get avocado hand, I saw.
And that's funny that came back up. Yes, yeah. That's a useful one.
Is that a useful one? What is avocado hand? You mean just...
It's actually a thing.
Yeah.
And it refers to the people who try and stab into the avocado pit while holding it in the palm of their hand and then miss and go straight through into their hand. It's an actual thing. People do it so much
that
doctors
would
have
that?
I'm just trying to help people.
Yeah. Although we should, because I'm an idiot and can't do it, and I'm not the only one, we should eliminate mandolins from the kitchen altogether.
Oh, my God, yes.
How many hands have been sliced?
How many fingertips have been lost?
Yeah. Oh, I'm cringing just talking about it.
Nobody ever wears the Kevlar glove.
No, because you got to be macho.
Because you look like an idiot.
No way, yeah. But yeah, I went to the hospital a few years ago because I tipped off whatever. But miraculously enough, the fingers are all back and everything looks fine. But yeah, I'm as pretty as I was the day I was born.
Yeah, so I used to work in the restaurant industry before I started writing, and I've got a nice one right here before I learned how to properly tuck my fingers.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting 10 or 11 stitches in this forefinger right here.
Oh.
So now in my capacity as a writer, I write about all kinds of different things.
Right.
I write about the whiskey industry. I write about, you know, I take deeper dives, but then I do shorter, like, useful kitchen stuff for Southern Kitchen, the website. And now I'm like, I'm going to help you not make all the mistakes I made.
That's a great thing to know, right?
And show people how to, like, properly hold a knife and how to, you know, just little things like that.
I think, well, everyone needs to know a little bit about that. And the nice part is if anyone's listening to or reading your stuff, you've already gone that far as to the point of you care enough about food, you care enough about wanting to cook or what you put in your bodies that would be the next best thing to read afterwards. You're like, okay, Mackenzie's already told me how to do these things, but now to do these things without killing myself is probably the next best thing. So
I would argue it's the best thing.
It might be. Yeah, read this first and then the avocado stuff later. No. But let's talk about that. I noticed that you were once a restaurant owner and chef. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And was that in Asheville?
So, excuse me.
Going way back.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to clear my throat so I can tell you the whole story.
Yeah, yeah, please.
Going way back, I started in the restaurant industry at the age of 14.
Okay.
I don't think it was my mother told me she had to sign off on the work permit or something, or I was too young to get one. I wanted to work in restaurants so badly. I mean, I didn't even go to homecoming or prom because I was like washing dishes.
Aww.
Because I loved the business. And it was just in this little cafe that was, you know, within walking distance of my house, right? Too young to drive.
Yeah.
And then I moved up through the cafe. I mean, it's not like it was a super fancy operation. Like,
sure.
It had a hot plate, and I was making sandwiches and whatever. Yeah. But I started cooking with him.
Chef de partie.
I was putting, like, cheesecake on plates and drizzling chocolate,
sure.
You know,
yeah.
Whatever. But I was doing that by within a year, I guess.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it looked crazy because I did not look my age. I probably looked like I was about 12 or 13.
Yeah.
And people would walk in there and be like.
Oh, yeah. My daughter, who is 12, is working as a busser every now and then at my place. And they're like, who is this little girl? I'm like, it's okay. She's my property.
Yeah.
Technically, if you own a restaurant, your children can work for you. Younger than 14.
Why else would you have children?
Well, it's an old law that, like, they stuck in there. They're like, because it's the old, like, you know, farm law, like, where you can have your employees be your family and they can work them however.
Have kids so you can put them to work.
Yeah.
So after that, I was a bit of a gypsy.
Mm-hmm.
Some people say I'm still kind of a bit of a gypsy, but I traveled around the country for a while.
200 fish shows under your belt, I heard.
This comes up in every podcast that I ever do.
Sometimes how you greeted me. You said, hello, I'm Mackenzie. I went.
That is not true. That is not how that went down. We were speaking in the context of music.
Okay, that's true. But so, yes.
But so I cooked and served food on the road as well.
Yeah.
And that was kind of how I made my way around.
Mm-hmm.
I had a Volkswagen bus. I'm that kind of aging hippie.
The box. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And I would make, you know, handmade veggie burger patties and, like, pasta salad. And then it was just like the hippies meal deal, you know. It's like $10 for a beer and a burger and some pasta.
Yeah.
And so, of course, I would have a line, like,
awesome.
All the way across the lot.
Yeah.
And then I settled in Asheville. I'm going to age myself. In late 1998.
Okay.
99.
Yeah.
After traveling for a few years. And
that's a great place for a hippie to shack up. Yeah, that's
totally. I mean, that's where all my, like, hippie friends went.
Sure, right.
That was where the hippies went
really
when they
cool
were ready to stop, like, driving all around the country.
Yeah.
They went to Asheville.
Yeah, they're like, oh, I don't need to search for anything anymore. I found it.
I found it.
The hippie mecca.
No, but truly, and back in the late 90s, that. It's not like we discovered it, obviously.
It's wonderful. I mean, it's so outdoorsy. The weather is amazing, but you get all the seasons. And, like, the air is just so clean and pure and fresh. And then there's great food out there. There's amazing agriculture. So, well, why wouldn't you want to live there?
Because it's impossible to make a living, which is why I'm in Nashville.
There you go. Really? So
it's hard. It's hard. I wouldn't say
interesting.
Impossible.
Yeah, but it's not like Nashville is a cheap place to live any longer.
It's
secret's
not.
Out.
It's not cheap. But at that time, you know, I was young and, like, didn't care, and I was washing dishes in restaurants and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it was enough. It was enough to be able to afford an apartment downtown.
Right.
So it was pretty special at that time,
yeah.
And now it's not affordable. And
but let's
but still
cut to your restaurant. I'm curious. What was the type of place that you...
Yeah, that place.
What was it?
Yeah, so after having kind of, like, worked through from dishwasher to, like, sous chef in restaurants in Asheville, I opened a restaurant with my ex-husband there.
Mm-hmm.
It's my ex-husband because the restaurant business is so hard.
Yeah, I can understand.
But it was,
I'm still
it was,
happily married, but
yeah,
I get it.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's like a little bistro, basically.
Yeah.
Like an American bistro.
Is it still existing today? Or
no, it's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you ran that for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I decided that I hated it.
Yeah. Well, one of my questions to you, but I think you've kind of answered a little bit, was I was going to ask, like, what came first, your love of food? It sounds so cliche, but like your love of food or being a writer, but it sounds like you weren't always a writer to begin with. Am I wrong in saying that you're a little school of hard knocks a little bit, at least when it comes to the food industry?
Both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how do you fuse the writing aspect of it? Where does that come from?
Well, I've always been a natural writer, mm-hmm. and I've always been a natural chef. Actually, well, not a natural chef,
right.
but like a handy in the kitchen and good at writing.
Right.
And so eventually, it was my father who said, why don't you write anymore? This cooking thing is hard. It's hard on you.
Yeah.
You're exhausted. Why don't you do it? And when I got to the point where I had reached like the pinnacle of my cooking career, I owned a restaurant and everything that I dreamed of all this time, and I realized that I just didn't like it.
Yeah.
I took a step back, and I actually went to go work at the front desk of a hotel while I worked on my writing career. And within 2 years of that, I was working full-time at an alt weekly.
At a what?
Alt weekly, called the Mountain Express.
Right, yeah. You know, that makes me, I reference this all the time. And if you ever watched the TV show Mad Men?
I've watched it a little. It's
There's an episode, it's very specific, and it makes me think, and even I'm talking to you listeners as you're listening to this as well, it's so poignant. He is essentially the mentor for a young copywriter, and she's coming up, Peggy, she's one of the main characters mm-hmm. of the show. She effectively has what you would consider to be like a perfect sales pitch meeting where the company buys what they were selling, and she hits all the points, and she's beaming, right? And she's like, this is amazing. And so at that moment, her boss, Don Draper, John Hamm, takes her to a side. He's like, how are you feeling right now? She's like, I feel like I'm on top of the world. He's like, is this the best feeling you've ever had? She's like, I think it is. He's like, good, because it will never be better than it is right now. And if you don't enjoy this as much as you should, then you shouldn't be in this industry. So it's like, I think, like, to the point you're saying, you're like, I'm at the top. I run my own restaurant. I'm making my own food. I'm doing it by my rules. And I'm still not exactly totally satisfied. It's like, that's a good tell for you to know where you should be or not be. And I like that.
I mean, it's the best thing that ever happened to me was achieving my dreams and realizing that I hated them. It's such a strange thing.
I love that quote. That might be the title of this episode.
I mean, everything about the restaurant business was not for me. I don't want to freak out over whether a server threw a fork in the trash.
Yeah.
You know,
you're
but
giving me anxiety because I know I have to buy new forks on Monday morning because we're low.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I couldn't let it go. And it turned me into a terrible, terrible person who was not very happy.
Yeah.
Like, you can joke about it, but I would seethe, you know?
Oh, no, this is all a big fake right now. I'm seething on the inside. It's rough because you're doing so many things at all times. Most people don't understand. It's kind of why I like doing this podcast, because it is a way to vent and be cathartic about an industry that's so intense and so demanding.
Yeah.
And as I was saying to my business partner, not Matt, but Kip, my business partner at the food hall, Crafton, I'm like, this industry is soul crushing at times. And he's like, yeah, I realize that. Like, now that we're in it, it's like, you do, hospitality is, you're trying to anticipate the guest's needs. You're trying to make them feel welcome walking into your home, essentially, in a professional sense. And it's kind of what have you done for me lately mentality, and you do feel it's thankless. I mean, yes, people pay for the food and they'll tip on the good service and things like that. So there is a monetary thank you, and even a good review every now and then is a nice thank you. But most of the time it's all shitty reviews, or it's, why didn't I get this? Why didn't I get that? How come I couldn't have this? And it's just like, can we all just be humans together and just respect that everyone's doing a little bit of work right now? And, you know, it goes both ways, because also servers or line cooks or whatever don't give a shit to be there at times. So then they're like giving 20% of themselves to the thing. And then you understand as a guest, you're like, hey, if you're not going to put the effort forth, why should I praise you? So I get it. It goes both ways. I think in the end, it's just humanity is a little rough at times.
It's like a big cycle of endless complaining. You know, like people would walk in the door and be like, the acoustics were off, to be sure. But people would walk in the front door, and the first thing they would say to me was, it's really loud in here.
And you said, huh, what?
And every single person who walked in would say that. And I'm like, all right, we've got to spend some money on some sound baffling.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just, it's a whole lot of complaining. And then I'd go in the back and complain about that.
Oh, the walk-in is the best place to vent.
I cried in so many walk-ins.
Yeah. Well, let's switch gears a little bit because we're here in Nashville. And speaking of that, you moved to Nashville to basically cover the food scene out here, right? Was that USA Today saying, hey, get your ass to Nashville type of thing? Or was did you bring that up? How did you get here for that reason?
So the brief history of that is while I was working at the Alt Weekly, the local daily, which was owned by Gannett, USA Today, decided that they wanted me. So they came and they plucked me out and they poached me and they brought me over to the Asheville Citizen Times. And I worked there for about almost 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And then it just kind of became obvious that my time in Asheville seemed like it was coming to a close. So it's actually a good company, despite what you might hear a lot of people in the industry say. So I put the feelers out and I said, you know, I'd like to move forward in my career. And within a couple of weeks, there was a position here for the food and culture storyteller of the South region. And they reached out to me and they said, I think we have the perfect fit.
What a cool gig. I mean, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, in the condition, yes, very, very much so. Was a dream job that I couldn't have envisioned that they would have offered me something like that because it was such a big leap. But the condition was that I had to move to Nashville within a few months.
Yeah,
and they said, are you willing to do that? And I said, yeah, heck yeah, I'm willing to do that.
All right, being a food writer sounds cool, but everything has its... its issues, I would imagine, just like us lamenting about the service industry. What's the job like? Like, what's the weekly lifestyle or life of a writer? Like, what are your responsibilities? How often do you have to write? What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, that really depends on what newsroom you're in or how many properties you're covering. And but back in Asheville, it was quite a grind. You know, I was doing a lot of daily reporting, and sometimes I would help with breaking news coverage. I have a North Carolina Press Association award for a murder that I helped cover, which is, you just kind of do all kinds of things. It's very, very, very similar to working in restaurants.
Yeah.
You know, it's there's adrenaline, there's, you know, you've got to know how to do everything. But now as a regional food reporter, that's my sole focus is regional food.
Yeah.
But as you kind of read off all of my titles, I have a lot of things that I'm doing.
Sure.
So
yeah.
I'm writing cooking content for the website, Southern Kitchen, southernkitchen.com, if you want to check it out.
Check it out. Link in our bio, yes.
And then I'm also doing, I have a weekly column.
Okay.
For the entire South, like all the papers in the region.
Oh, wow.
So a Sunday column that's kind of cooking focused.
And that's more broad. That's not just Nashville focused. You're talking about the whole South.
Like, the whole, yeah.
What would you consider? Is that from like it's Louisiana to Florida?
Yeah, Florida's not included because Florida's its own.
Yeah, Florida. Why is that, right? Like no one.
Florida's Florida.
Florida's
it's like Texas
its own
is Texas
island.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so Louisiana across to Georgia up to North Carolina?
North Carolina, South Carolina. I mean, if you go look at your local Gannett paper, you'll see my stories in
it. Okay.
Yeah, Louisiana is an awful lot of fun to cover.
Oh,
Kentucky, Tennessee, all of that.
We were speaking to the chef, the new chef over at Commander's Palace in New Orleans. And she was talking about, I just found it to be so fascinating. I asked her, like, what's something new in the South that we should be aware of? And she's like, well, I love that we as a culinary society in New Orleans are blending Vietnamese food into the culture, and it's not considered fusion anymore. It's just part of, like, our daily food. Because there's such a strong Vietnamese influence now, and it has been for the last few, like, 34 years. But it's not, like... it's not kitsch to like add some food in from like a Vietnamese menu. It's like, no, these are just staples of the South now. And,
yeah.
and I love that that's like an evolvement to where the Southern food is just what Southern food is. It's food being made today in the South.
Yeah.
And it can be whatever it needs to be.
Exactly.
And it's expanding. So I don't know. What's your take? Because you're the authority. What is your take on Southern food today?
I mean, what you just said is a particular theme of my coverage.
Yeah.
You know, Southern food is not a monolith of fried chicken, right? It's despite what a lot of people think. But I think perceptions are changing about what Southern food means exactly in the way that you just said.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a variety of different cultures cooking food in a region that is in some ways defined by what grows there.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's becoming more and more of a, you know, out of the fried chicken box,
yeah.
so to speak.
I mean, yes, there's a lot fried, but that's part of the reasoning as well. Just maybe, what, because it was cheap and it was easier to fry food?
Yeah, because it's good.
It's delicious. Yeah, finger licking. I think that's awesome. So let's dial in a little bit to Nashville. Mm-hmm. So since you're talking about you live here now, Nashville, I came here probably in 2018 with friends. We went to a party. We were just driving. We were in an Uber, and I looked across the skyline, and I think I counted 13 cranes that were building high rises all at the same exact time. And I even said out loud, I'm like, oh, this town is growing up fast. And now, I hadn't been in a few years, and now I'm here today, and I'm like, holy shit, like, this town grew up real quick.
Yeah, how many cranes did you count this time?
There's a ton. I mean,
yeah,
it's still
going.
It's insane, and it's impressive because there's so much food. Obviously, you got your hot chicken, and you got wings, and you got the traditional Southern food and barbecue and all that. But you got everything else too, which I really think really rounds out a food culture. When you go to a place and it's like, you go for the hot chicken, it's like, okay, cool. Well, I did that today and I'm here for 5 days. Now what? You know, and it's nice to be able to try other things as well. I mean, my wife and I, notably, we went to Lyon, France, and that's like the food capital of the world. 2 days straight, we ate ramen while we were there because it was the best ramen we've ever had in our lives.
And we were
like, who knew that you were going to find the best ramen in Lyon? But also, why wouldn't you find the best ramen in the food capital of the world? So I feel that, like, coming to Nashville, it's starting to feel like you can get anything you want out here, and it's all really high quality. Care to speak to any of, like, that evolvement and growth?
Yeah, I'm happy to, and perfect timing, because one of the many things that I'm in the middle of doing right now is my colleague at the Tennessean, which is where I work out of, he and I just spent months. I'm trying to think when we even started, but we just spent months and a ton of money. My boss was like, "And you spent how much trying to find the top 25 restaurants in Nashville?"
Ooh, well, that's a fun.
And it was fun. But I mean, at the beginning, I was so excited. I told all of my friends, like, "Guess what I get to do?" And halfway through, I was like, "How much longer? How many more tasting menus?
Like,
are we almost done?" But I just ate my way through the city for the past few months. Thank you to my boss at the Tennessean for that.
What are a couple of notable ones?
So many. It's bananas. I mean, you know, God, Nashville loves a tasting menu. I was getting kind of tired of that by the end of it. But, like, for example, June. Sean Brock's newest place. I mean, I lost count of the courses, but they were just so beautiful. I might prefer Audrey, which is downstairs.
Right.
And it's Southern. It's a little bit more kind of down to earth, which I love. And it's an exploration of Southern Appalachian food. And my entire family is, you know, Southern Appalachian.
Yeah.
So it really spoke to me. It was a great one.
Really?
Great. And I mean, I had probably one of the best steaks of my life at Bourbon Steak, which is up in the Marriott. Who knew?
Oh, right. That's the top floor, right?
It's on floor like 30-something. You ride a golden elevator to the top. But I know that he has the Continental, and which is in the Hilton. I believe the Hilton.
That's what it is. I'm
like suddenly drawing a blank when I'm trying to think about which hotel, because I've been to so many hotel restaurants lately.
What an impact he has had on the food culture here, right?
I know. And Continental is a beautiful exploration of kind of old school, you know, Continental.
Yeah.
I mean, I love those projects. I think they're all great. And he's still innovating within them. He's, you know, doing little pop-ups.
Yeah.
Up in June, one day he did a sushi pop-up because he has access to amazing seafood.
Yeah.
And, you know, just bringing cool things for the city to try. And I really do admire that. Yeah, I mean, I followed his career as well because I, you know, ate at Husk back when he was there, when he was part of that empire, but he no longer is.
Yeah. Then he just rebuilt everything and now he's dominating again. So kudos to a guy like that that can make an industry so strong.
Yeah, but there are so many great chefs here in this city, you know.
What about, let's speak a little bit to the beverage side of things, because we were talking about cocktails earlier before we jumped on the actual mics, but what's like, where is a place that we need to go for like a cocktail or distillery or brewery, something like that? What's really jumping off now?
A brewery. I love Southern Grist. They have, I just moved from Beer City and, you know, Asheville.
In Asheville, yeah.
And I had the beer at Southern Grist and I was like, if this place was in Asheville, like it would be nationally recognized.
Really?
You know?
Yeah.
The way that people scrutinize beer in Asheville, that beer is just excellent. And then Southern Grist over here on the east side of Nashville, they have an amazing little restaurant inside called Lauder. And everybody just needs to go there.
Really?
It's really great. It's just the combination of the two is perfect. Cocktails, I mean, I just mentioned Bourbon Steak.
Yeah.
And it's in the name. They have incredible whiskey selection.
I'm going to sound like an idiot if they're closed now because I haven't been back in a while, but Patterson House, I assume, is
amazing.
Still
rolling. I was
going to
bring
rocking.
That up.
That was my favorite place when I went last time.
Yeah.
Amazing cocktails there.
And then another incredible restaurant on the second floor there.
Catbird Seat.
Yeah, the Catbird Seat, which is incredible. I've overused the word incredible at this point. I'm going to have to find another one.
We'll do a search and we'll replace it with awesome or
fantastic.
Yeah.
top notch.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm a writer. I've got synonyms. The big bar outside of Bastion is a whole lot of fun. Bastion's another great restaurant. Yeah. I've just named all of the tasting menu restaurants for you. And there's more. There's plenty more.
Can
Nashville
you
loves
get
a tasting
good
menu.
Food at a honky tonk?
I mean, I hear things about bologna sandwiches. Do you know anything about that?
I don't know anything about that. I actually do not know anything about that. But apparently I ate a bologna sandwich last night. But someone was having so much fun last night. My friend reminded me that he bought bologna sandwiches for us at Robert's.
I just
Honky
called
Tonk.
You out.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Oh, my listeners know that I am a total, you know, mess.
I love it.
I had a bologna sandwich, apparently, and apparently it was great, and I had a Miller High Life along with it, but I have no recollection.
That sounds like the perfect Nashville experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. but I was saying to Matt, my podcast partner, he had never been in Nashville, and I was trying to give him my insight to it. I said, yeah, we need to go into a honky-tonk just because. Like, it's unlike other places. Most places don't have this, and then not just have this, but have so many of them. I mean, it's like a mall for alcohol and live music.
And
it's
also for containing the tourists.
And containing the tourists.
That's where they all go.
that's a good way to go, yeah. We're going to keep you all right here.
And then we see people over on this side of town, and we're like, what are you doing? Get back to Broadway.
Stragglers. Get them back.
Get back to Broadway. No, but I'm actually, it is fun. I'm joking. It's fun down there. There's a lot to do. I'm actually going to go run around down there tonight because I have a free night, and I haven't done a whole lot of the honky-tonk thing. But there are some nice restaurants down there on Broadway. They're just kind of hidden.
Yeah.
You gotta part the masses. But then you have the Ryman Auditorium right there. Right across the street from the Ryman is 5th and Broadway and Assembly Food Hall upstairs.
I just went there yesterday. I was checking it out.
It's great.
It's massive.
There's a third floor. Did you go up to the top?
Uh-huh.
A nice little wine bar up there.
That was really impressive. I met the owner of that place, not on my trip, but he actually came to meet me when Crafton first opened, because I think he was like, who's this guy opening a food hall? And so we chatted for a while, and he told me what their sales revenue was per week, and it's what most restaurants do in a year.
Whoa.
And it was insane. And I get it now that I visited. Matt and I went there in the morning. We ate at the Prince's has their own little kiosk there. I get it. It's not the same as going to the original Prince's, but it was still damn good. It was right. And then we even put it on our stories. This isn't any too salacious of a comment, but we said, let's go to Prince's and let's go to Hattie B's right after. And we ordered the exact same thing, just some tenders at the same hot level. And a side of pickles, and we just A-B'd them back and forth. No doubt Prince's was far better, in my opinion. Like, you know, and I know maybe as a food writer, you don't want to weigh in because you got to be happy. You don't want to say anything negative about one of the bigger companies in the area. But Hattie B's was fine, delicious. Matt thought it was a little spicier than Prince's. I didn't think so. But just the crisp and the crunch of the fried chicken from Hattie B's was, like, It was no competition. It was far better in my mind.
But Hattie B's was better?
No, Prince's.
Oh, okay. Well, Prince's has been around a lot longer.
They're like the OG, right?
Yeah, they're the OG, yeah. And they've had time to perfect the recipe. Yeah. So, yeah, that's...
I do love that people freak out about fried chicken or hot chicken and all this. Like, it's such a big deal. It's like, guys, but then... I guess I get it, because then when you start going to different places and everyone's got their own version of it, then you start seeing where there's a separation of quality or flavor, and you're like, oh, okay, yeah.
You want to hear something funny? The only time I really eat hot chicken is when I'm in the airport, and there's a party foul in the airport.
Go.
I mean, I'm not saying I haven't had it, but almost religiously when I fly a lot,
yeah.
I go and I sit down at the bar.
Have you been to Dino's?
Party foul.
Is it Dino's right next to Jane's Hideout?
Oh, not yet, but it's on my list to get to.
That was recommended to us by Sean Brock from the beginning. He's
Like,
best place to get hot chicken in town is at Dino's, and it's a great little dive bar, and it was fun. And we ate there, and it was legit.
Yeah. I need to get over there. It's really, I've been here since last November, so I haven't even been here a year.
Oh, yeah, you got to
watch it. I'm making my way. I'm trying to. When I first got here, I set a goal of at least one new restaurant a week, but it's ended up being more like two or three, four, sometimes five. That's, you know, like when we were doing the top 25, it was like every night.
You must have a very exciting expense report.
Oh my God, I just did the expense report yesterday and I sent it in, and I just keep waiting for the email or like the phone call.
Yeah, because I mean, obviously, like, they're not paying for your booze. I would assume you probably have to, but maybe if you're like, it's a wine bar and I have to try these wines.
I made the argument. Yeah. It used to not be that they would cover booze.
Well, yeah, I guess you couldn't go to a brewery and not expense beer, right?
It's not like I'm boozing it up, but I'll have a cocktail or two. I'll try the wine list, you know, I got to see what they've got.
this might be the next job I need to take over. When are you quitting?
I need to take
this job.
No. When they'll drag me out of there kicking and screaming.
Well, I appreciate your time. Is there anything that like we need to know? Like, what's something like maybe even that you just stumbled upon in your short time being here where you're like, I didn't know that Nashville did this or something like, is there just anything that I'm putting you on the spot, but that like comes to mind where you're like, oh, this was impressive.
Yeah, actually, yes. Maíz de la Vida, it's a food truck. Oh. It's over in front of Chopper Tiki Bar.
Oh.
And it has what I think are the best tacos in town.
You called it La Stella Vida, is that what you said?
No, maíz, like, corn, de la vida, corn is life.
Oh, maíz.
I have very terrible pronunciation, very, very southern.
Yes.
M-A-I-Z.
Yes.
So it's in Spanish.
Yeah. Yes.
And the chef, Julio Hernandez, he sources heirloom corn from small farmers in Mexico. Nixtamalizes the corn, hand makes the masa and the tortillas. He just opened, he's got a brick and mortar coming, and he just opened a place where like he makes the masa in the restaurant.
Yeah.
And also serves lunch and while they're like pressing. It's a tortilla shop, but they also serve food. But the food
because
truck,
there's a food truck, you have to have a commissary, so he's kind of doing the stuff out of there.
Okay. Totally. Got but it. The food truck is bananas. The quesadilla tacos, I mean, they're just incredible.
All right.
So handmade tortillas.
Yeah.
Wagyu beef.
Oh, wow.
And the consomme you have to get and then you take it into the tiki bar. And you get a tiki drink like the size of your head. They're insanely boozy. And just sit there and eat tacos and drink these boozy drinks. It's just like, it's the best thing ever.
Well, I'm so excited.
I'm actually doing that after this.
You're going there now?
Well, we got to take some videos and photos for another project. But after this, I'm like, any excuse to go there and have that experience, I will take it every time.
I'm so bummed that I'm interviewing you on like just hours before I leave town.
I
should have done this the other way around actually go out and enjoy these things. But I appreciate it. Thanks for giving me your time and talking with us about this.
It's my pleasure.
Let me know next time you're in North Carolina. If you ever make it out to the Triangle, we'll have to, you know, show you around and let you know what's going on out there.
I would love that. And I need to get back. But for now, I'm just trying to figure out this big city.
Yeah. So go check out southernkitchen.com. That's via USA Today Network South. As Matt would say, eat and drink merrily, folks. So maybe you would read about where you should eat and drink merrily. That's it.
Yes, that's it.
Sorry, Matt. I
you got it.
Completely ruined your
sign-off. You got there.
Thanks for listening to the NCF&B podcast. And if you've stuck with us this long, review us on iTunes and remember, 5 stars are encouraged.